This is the Rich Eisen Show.
I love this.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Kenny Pickett.
Mike Tomlin here on the Rich Eisen Show. What was your take on the whole idea that his hands are too small?
I potentially was capable of buying into that if I didn't watch him play college football in Pittsburgh.
Earlier on the show, Chargers head coach Brandon Staley. Still to come, Saints head coach Dennis Allen. Baseball media personality John Boy. Plus Falcons general manager Terry Fontenot. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air here today. We had a great chat with Brandon Staley of the Los Angeles Chargers. In a matter of moments, we'll be chatting with Dennis Allen, the head coach of the New Orleans Saints, their first new head coach since 2006, man. That's been a long time since they've had to name a new head coach there. And the old head coach is the one who brought him into New Orleans for the first time. Now this is his second stint. Terry Fontenot of the Atlanta Falcons. Just be fair and balanced, right? If you got to have a Saints, you got to have a Falcon on him. Vice versa.
They love each other, those fan bases, so much.
Love is doing a very heavy lift. Very heavy lift in that phrase right there. And the famed baseball I would say pundit, which might not be the way he would describe himself, but media conglomerate, John Boy will be calling us to join us to talk about what the hell happened between Madison Bumgarner and the first base umpire, Dan Bellino, yesterday in Miami. But joining us here on the Mercedes-Benz Vans phone line right now is the aforementioned new head coach of the New Orleans Saints, Dennis Allen. How you doing, coach?
Hey, Rich, how's it going, man? I'm doing outstanding here.
I'm doing fine. I just survived May the 4th last night trying to decide which Star Wars movie to watch with my three children, and it was bedlam. It was totally bedlam. So
yeah, just in time for Cinco de Mayo, right?
Yes, that's right. Just in time for me to need a drink. Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, awesome. Hey, before we get started, just wanted to say I appreciate you having me on and making sure I'm ahead of Terry Fontenot, not behind Terry Fontenot. So that was good timing on your part.
It is. I appreciate it. You know what? I gave you first up. I gave you first up. We had that spot. Timing's perfect. I know. But you're born in Atlanta, right? Isn't that correct? You've got an Atlanta history.
Yeah, I was. Right? I was actually born in Atlanta. My dad played for the Falcons from 68 to 72. He was a linebacker. And so I was actually born in Atlanta and actually spent some time working there under both Dan Reeves and Jim Moore.
That's right. But you're an R.C. Slocum guy, though, first up, right? Wouldn't you say correct?
From Texas A&M? Absolutely. You know, I'm Aggie through and through. You know, it's amazing how your family kind of carries you to where you go in life. And you know, my dad played at A&M, and so then my older brother and myself and my younger sister, we all played at Texas A&M or went to Texas A&M, and then, you know, all of us were born in Atlanta, Georgia. So kind of a cool experience how everybody, you know, kind of follows the same path. But yeah, RC was my college coach, and man, what a great experience being able to have an opportunity to both play under him and then started my coaching career under him. So it was pretty awesome.
Do you still reach out to him? You just still chit chat with him? Or
yeah,
two
as a matter of fact, we talked. You know, before I got this job, and then after I got the job, we've talked a couple of times, and you know, RC had a battle with cancer and fought through that, and you know, is on the up and up now and was really a big impact in my life.
Dennis Allen, new Saints head coach here on the Rich Eisen Show. When was the first time you got an indication that Sean might decide to just no longer be the coach in New Orleans? And when was the first time you got that sense about Sean Payton, Dennis?
Yeah, look, well, certainly when you're in one spot for 16 years, you know, all good things come to an end at some point in time. So you knew there was going to be some point where Sean would decide to, you know, move on and do something different. But it was sometime, you know, after the season was over. I know that he, you know, took some time, went down to Cabo, knew he was, you know, having some thoughts there so I'd say it was probably, a week or two after the season before I really, you know, knew that this was kind of a possibility.
And then you chat with ownership, and then the process comes out with you being the head coach there. How much, like, what from your first experience, obviously, you know, it didn't work out with you in Oakland, but what from that first experience do you bring into this now where you know, okay, I know this, that, and such will be different, and I'll handle it differently, whatever that this, that, and such is?
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, I won't get into, like, any specific examples as to what, but, you know, the first thing that I think about is I've just been through a lot more than when I took over in Oakland. I've seen a lot more. I've experienced a lot more. You know, I just kind of know how to manage a team better. You know, when I went to Oakland, I was a defensive coordinator for 1 year in Denver. And I went to Oakland in a situation where I was a first-year head coach, and Reggie was a first-year general manager, and Mark had just taken over for his father as the owner of the team. And so there was a lot of firsts that were going on at that time, and now I experienced that for 2.25 years there in Oakland, and now I come back to New Orleans, and I get a chance to sit back in New Orleans and be the defensive coordinator and watch Sean Payton work and watch how Mickey Loomis handles his business as the general manager. And I see the communication between the personnel department and the coaching staff that takes place. And so I've just seen how it really works. And so I think I'm better prepared for that. And I know this, I've got more confidence in myself, and I know that, you know, I've got to do it my way. And that's the only way that you have a chance to have success and make it work.
Obviously you're elevated in an established program that you helped establish on one side of the ball. How will things look different or similarly to the Sean Payton era? I mean, it's been a while since Saints fans have had to get used to something new. How familiar might the new look like, Dennis Allen?
Well, look, I think one of the first things that I wanted to do when I got the job is I wanted to keep the continuity within the organization, within the staff. And so I was able to keep Pete Carmichael on as the offensive coordinator. I promoted Ryan Nielsen and Chris Richard as co-defensive coordinators. I was able to keep Darren Rizzi here as the assistant head coach and special teams coordinator. So a lot of the systems and a lot of the schemes are going to stay the same. A lot of the ways that we do things are going to stay the same. I'll just kind of put my own spin and my own flavor to it. But look, a lot of times you get into these situations and you become a head coach and you're going into some of these programs that are maybe a little bit down and out at the time. I feel like I'm very fortunate in that I'm taking over a job that it wasn't broken. There's a lot of really good things that have been done here over the last 16 years, and a great culture has been built. And I'm just trying to really kind of keep that going and put my own little tweaks on it as we go along.
Right, and then this team had a chance to make the playoffs last year if results in Week 18, which I still have to get used to saying, had worked out. Dennis Allen here on the Rich Eisen Show. How is Jameis doing? How does he look? We saw some video of him having somebody try to slap the ball out of his hands while trying to. His footwork looked terrific. What do you think?
Yeah, look, I think he's doing well in the rehab process. You know, one of the things you know about Jameis is probably one of the hardest workers that I've been around. You know, he's just got a tireless work ethic, and he loves football, and that's. That's his life. Like, he does everything is all about ball to him. And so he's working his tail off and really doing a really good job in the rehab. And I like where he's at.
And so is he your Week 1 starter? Do you think he's going to be healthy enough to start Week 1, Dennis?
Well, certainly that's certainly the plan. you know, and
right.
And, you know, there's a lot of days between now and Week 1. But we certainly like where he's at right now. We like the progress that he's making. Man, I really loved a lot of the things that he did last year for us, 14 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. I mean, you know, there was just some really good stuff that you see. And, you know, my vision and my hope is that he continues to progress on the same level as he gets another year in the system.
And then, you know, we always talk about what teams have added, and I'll get to your draft in a second. Very rarely can you add somebody of the caliber of Michael Thomas, but it looks, you know, like that's what that is technically what we keep talking about, everything going on with your team. But forget that can't guard Mike is coming back, right? So it's possible we see Winston to Thomas in week one of the Saints season?
Yeah, that would be our hope. We feel good about what Mike's done in the rehab process. You know, there's still a few hurdles that we gotta climb with any of our guys that had any injuries that they're trying to get back from. But I kind of look at it in terms of, you know, we drafted Chris Olave in the first round, but I almost look at it as getting Mike back. It's almost like we had two first-round draft choices at wide receiver, so I feel really good about that.
He must have been really happy about you guys trading up for Olave in the same way that I guess McLaurin was upset that the Washington traded down and let you go get Olave, I'm sure, you know. So
Yeah, look, it was certainly you know, we felt like we needed to add some playmakers to our offense. We felt like that was an area that we could improve our football team. And you know, we're really all about just what do we got to do to win games here. And so I felt like he was the player that we kind of targeted, that we knew we were going to get a great person, a tireless worker, tough, smart, highly, highly competitive, one of the best route runners I felt like in this year's draft, and comes from, you know, an established winning program where we've had success getting guys out of Ohio State. And
that's right.
Man, I just felt like the way the draft, you know, kind of fell for us, I felt great about how it worked out.
And then Penning is just a nasty, nasty mauler of a tackle. You got him later on in the first round. That seemed like such a no-brainer in a way. You had, Armstead leave. What do you think Penning brings to your equation, Coach?
Yeah, I think exactly that. I think, you know, kind of a raw, tough, nasty, athletic talent. And there's certainly, you know, some development that we've got to do with the player, but really like the potential of this player a lot. Obviously, losing Teron Armstead was a big loss for us, and so trying to find somebody that could potentially be that replacement was something that we were looking at. I think my defensive mentality came out just a little bit in that pick, and that, you know, it's kind of that tough, nasty type of player.
Yeah, he is exactly that. And you know, and the next question I'm going to ask you, and I understand you like these guys, you drafted them for a reason, right? But the conversation about your picks coming out of the draft is who you did not spend them on. Did you consider taking a quarterback at any point in time in the first round, Coach?
Well, look, I would say that we did our due diligence on all of the quarterbacks, and there was a spot in the draft where we felt like we would feel comfortable with, you know, with all of those guys. And so, you know, it's funny how, you know, you kind of have a – quarterback was not the position that we said, man, we're targeting and we got to go find a way to go get this position. But yet we did our due diligence, and if that's the way that the draft had worked out, then, you know, we'd have considered that.
And that's the because it's tough for me to even figure out, and I sat there for all 262 picks, the exact picks you had going into the draft because of the maneuvers that you and Mickey Loomis made all over the draft board. But the idea was, okay, you're trading into the first round for somebody or to package up to go up top. Did you attempt to do that, attempt to go top 10, top 5 to go get somebody at some point?
Well, look, I think we explored what options were there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we felt like there was going to be a run on these receivers, and that was an area that we wanted to try to address. We felt like there was going to be a run on them kind of in that 8, 9, 10, 11 type of area. And so I think that was kind of the position that we were kind of looking to see if we needed to get into that area to mm-hmm. be able to get one of these receivers. And as we started seeing them come off the board a little bit, we felt like at 11 with Washington, you know, the value was there for what we were going to be able to go and get.
Okay, and then last one for you is, you know, we keep talking certainly on NFL Network that the offseason or non-playing season, as we call it, is just one big puzzle piece, right, where there's free agency, there's draft, and then there's free agency after the draft. And the perfect example of that last part is the Saints going to get Tyrann Mathieu and bring him back home to New Orleans. What will he bring to your equation, in your estimation, Coach Dennis Allen?
Yeah, I think he brings an emotion and energy, a leadership aspect to our football team, and he's been one of the best playmakers in the NFL, you know, over the last 7, 8, 9 years, and so we felt like he was a perfect fit for what we needed and what we like to do. Gives him a chance to come back home. There's an excitement that comes along with that, with bringing him back here, and we're just really excited about having him, and think he's going to, you know, bring a lot to our team in terms of just playmaking ability, leadership, and just energy.
Coach, thanks very much. Greatly appreciate it. Are you handing out biscuits to the media for the first, or beignets to the media for the first time when you see them?
I was hoping that Sean would just keep sending them and that I'd save a little bit in the wallet and wouldn't have to spend for those things.
Man, he set the bar too high, I think. You know, no offense. I mean,
maybe that'll be one of the differences.
Well, he's Ted Lasso. I mean, that was ridiculous. At least he stopped talking for you to actually take the job, so that was helpful. That was helpful for me. You take care of yourself, Coach.
I'm going to stay away from that one.
No problem. I can say that, right? Thanks for the call,
okay,
Dennis
Rich.
Allen. We'll do
take
this
care,
again.
Buddy.
Thank you so much. That's Dennis Allen, everybody, head coach of the New Orleans Saints, right here on the Rich Eisen Show.
I think Sean just finished, like 5 minutes.
5 minutes ago. Missy, stop talking. We did get Sean Payton to sign the Ted Lasso Believe sign. Yeah. I don't know if it's on camera for your shot behind. There it is. You can see if you're watching on Peacock that scribble above the Believe sign. Yeah, we got Sean Payton to sign that. I think we should get any coach that comes in here to the studio to sign that.
I love it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we thought of that the minute Ron Rivera left here.
Yeah, Ron was here for Super Bowl week, and we're like, missed it.
I think every coach should sign the Believe sign, don't you think?
It's a great idea.
Okay.
Just like we get the UCLA people.
Right below that. Those are the Rose Bowl seats that our friend Deedon from the Rose Bowl sent us.
And we try to get every player to sign the helmet, you know.
So every single player that's played in the Rose Bowl.
That we've had in here.
Yeah. Right. Charles Woodson, right? Mm-hmm. Ryan Leaf, clearly, obviously.
Josh Rosen.
Aikman signed
Troy Aikman.
Ron Rivera, I think, did sign the Rose Bowl seat.
That's right,
because he's been in here twice.
And the neat thing is these are seats 3 and 4 in the Rose Bowl, and Josh Rosen, the number 4 is still in there as the plate that this Rose Bowl screwed into that seat. The number 3 fell out, but Josh wore number 3. See, he wrote the number 3 and signed next to that. We love that item.
Very funny.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back here, the simple question about what happened in Major League Baseball is what the hell was that all about? Madison Bumgarner being checked for sticky stuff on his hand, but the umpire stared at him while he did it.
In the first inning.
Yeah, right.
That's next. John Boy to talk about it as well, right here on the Rich Eisen Show. Terry Fontenot of the Falcons still to come. Let's talk Sleep Number, people, because quality sleep is so essential. That's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, and the same thing for your partner, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side, helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature, quiets your snores or your partner's? Sleep Number does that. My Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's is 70. 10 numbers apart, but it truly is the world of difference. The Sleep Number sleep that you get is unbelievable. You will love it. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now you could save 50%. That's 50%. On the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com. It's that time of year, people. Spring has sprung, and that means spring cleaning, or at least The partner in your life is demanding that you do it. Whether that means stocking up on cleaning supplies or swapping out your winter clothes for new spring clothes, make sure you're using Ibotta and get real cash back with every purchase. Ibotta is a free app that gives you the most cash back every time you shop on hundreds of items from groceries to beauty supplies to toys. The average Ibotta user earns $256 per year. That could cover the cost of an entire shopping trip, that flight you've been eyeing, or the fancy dinner you've been craving. Join the over 50 million users and earn cash back every time you shop from over 2,700 brands and retailers. And right now, Ibotta is offering our listeners $5 for just trying Ibotta by using the code EISEN when you register. Just go to the App Store or Google Play Store and download the free Ibotta app to start earning cash back and use my code EISEN. That's Ibotta in the Google Play or App Store and use my code EISEN. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, John Boy of John Boy Media is about to join us. He's the king of lip reading. He had a video from last night's Yankees game, their first loss, an 11-game winning streak is done, where Boone got ejected for arguing balls and strikes on Aaron Judge, and it was the most profane argument between him and the umpire, and he nailed every lip read down to the syllable.
How are they so good at that?
So there's the arguments that happen when there's managers yelling at an umpire and umpire yelling back. Then there's the ejection that comes from an umpire staring at a player while he massages his hand. That happened yesterday at the end of our show. We saw this video right before we went off the air. First base umpire Dan Bellino checking the left hand of Madison Bumgarner, who gave up a run in the bottom of the first inning in Miami yesterday and was barking at the home plate umpire. And the first base umpire is the one in charge of checking his hand. He's just touching his hand and staring at Bumgarner, who's looking down at his hand, until Bumgarner looks up and sees the umpire staring at him while he's massaging his hand. And Bumgarner said the magic word and Bellino ejected him. And two things about this. First, an apology, because we told everybody about this at the end of the show, and we said, please Google it. So if you Googled Madison video yesterday, we apologize if you found something else. Number two is after the game. I said at the end of the show yesterday, in addition to saying Google Madison video, afterwards, Dan Bellino is going to have to say something after the game. He's going to have to talk about it after the game. What's he going to say? Like, he's got to at least explain, like, why he was staring at Bumgarner and not looking at the hand he's inspecting, which is his job to do. And all he said after the game was, quote, "There really wasn't a conversation there, as the report will note," because they have to make a report for the Major League Baseball commissioner that will release it. "Well, there really wasn't a conversation there, as the report will note." Yeah, that's the point. He just made some inappropriate comments and was removed from the game. How about your stare was inappropriate? And it gives off the impression that you have an agenda, which is the worst thing for an umpire to give off as an impression. And it's even worse that he's just like, yeah, I'm not going to even explain to you what I was doing, touching his fingers and looking at him until he would meet my gaze. And then actually, I don't even know what he told the umpire, but if my job was dependent on somebody else checking my hand, and as they're checking my hand and staring at me, eager to elicit a reaction, and I say something that causes me to be ejected, I would basically counter and saying, actually, what I said is extremely appropriate. You're the inappropriate one. Who's inappropriate, me or you? It's appropriate to tell you the magic word. What are you doing? What's inappropriate is you not explaining what you're doing, staring at a guy while you're touching his hand. That's the inappropriate thing. What's appropriate is you describing your actions, Dan Bellino. So to discuss All of that and more is our friend who's got a big announcement from John Boy Media back here on the Mercedes-Benz Vans phone line. John Boy, how are you, John Boy?
I'm doing very well. Excited to be back. You know, it's a quicker turnaround between appearances. So I appreciate that.
Yes. You know, we had to call you because you're very well known for your lip reading. How are you at awkward stare reading? How are you at that, John Boy? How are you with that?
I'm going to find out. I'm working on that one as we speak, and it is a doozy. It is very bizarre.
Well, I mean, look, we knew this sort of TSA checkpoint setup that Major League Baseball threw into the mix in the middle of last season at some point was going to lead to an awkward exchange, if not an outright ejection. But what the hell happened with Madison Bumgarner and the umpire Dan Bellino yesterday? Do you think?
So as far as my kind of really quick, I haven't deep dove researches, is there in 2018 or 2019, Madison Bumgarner got ejected for arguing with an umpire that was on Dan, what is it, Bellino?
Dan Bellino, crew? Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. That was on his crew, and then the next day when, or the next time he was behind the dish, he squeezed Madison Bumgarner. So and he had words for him. So he seems like an umpire that loves standing up for his brethren, another umpire. So as Mad Bum comes off the mound, he chirps at the umpire, says it should have been a strikeout because he thought the home plate umpire missed a call. And I think the Dan umpire is punishing him for yelling at his coworker by staring, like, really, that's how you're going to treat us kind of vibe. But definitely just waits it out. And Mad Bum says, if you got something to say, F you, and then he's out.
I kind of don't blame Madison Bumgarner. If somebody's just going to be just, you know, going through the motions of his job, right? I mean, if you're looking for something, you should literally be looking for something, like truly looking at the hand that you're inspecting, not staring at the guy while you're massaging his hand, waiting for him to say something ejectionable, which is what there's no other way to describe what we just saw yesterday.
Both actions on their own are awkward. If he was to stare at him like that and wasn't holding his hand, it would still be painfully awkward. And if he wasn't staring at him but massaging his hand for that long, that's also awkward. You combine the two and we're in a really weird territory of awkwardness.
Well, I mean, and then the making it even worse, you know, we kind of saw this yesterday at the end of our show because this was a matinee down in Miami. And so we saw this and kind of hit on it. And my thought was like, okay, so 100% we're going to have to see what the umpire says after the game to explain himself. And all Dan Bellino said after the game was, quote, well, there really wasn't a conversation there, as the report will note, meaning the commissioner's report that they have to file. He just made some inappropriate comments and was removed from the game. And that's all he said. And that's not acceptable. That's not acceptable at all as an answer from the umpire.
No,
wouldn't you agree?
I mean, he definitely goaded him into it. And the magic word for a lot of umpires is you. Once you make it personal, I'm sure if you put the F word ahead of that, that's a pretty easy trigger
yes.
for them. But, I mean, that doesn't happen if he's not slowly massaging and staring angrily into his eyes. What it's, you know, it's like, hey, get out of here, man. This is weird.
So
I think he would have ejected him even if those weren't the words he said. He was just trying to eject someone. And I've heard this umpire was a lawyer and really writes really, really detailed and good reports, and you can see from his comments after the game that he's kind of proud of that. He just keeps saying, as my report will note. So I think he's pretty amped up that he has extra work after the game where he can put his law degree.
Oh my gosh. You know what? I mean, we could laugh about it all we want, but when it comes down to it, there should be no 100%, there should be no question that the umpire that's behind home plate or at any base in Major League Baseball does not take into the game with him any sort of preconceived notion against a player or baggage or anything like that. I mean, that's what called being a professional is about, don't you think? I mean, what do you think should be done here, if anything? John Boy.
They're going to handle it all behind closed doors. But this is, I mean, it's the first inning. And as an umpire, you know how much this hurts the team. Now they have to use, I mean, how many pitchers do they end up using? One, two, three, four, five, six more pitchers to complete the game. That hurts them going into the weekend series. That hurts them going into the next game. And Madison Bumgarner's having a really good start to his season. And now he's got this one-inning pitch, one-earned run start on his record. It's just more at stake than your induced hurt feelings, you know? Like, your feelings are only hurt because you wanted them to get hurt right there. You were searching for it. So, I don't always like saying it's the ump show, but this was probably the biggest one we've seen in a while.
I think so, and I guess this is the holding of the beer of the Angel Hernandez, Kyle Schwarber set to that we saw on Sunday Night Baseball a couple of weeks ago. And I hate to do this, you know, and I just said this moments ago, you know, it's a tough gig, man. It's one of the toughest gigs in sports is umpiring, and obviously home plate umpiring. But do you think baseball is an umpiring problem, John Boy? What do you think?
Well, I just think that better solutions have come and are coming. I think the problem is that more pitches are being thrown harder, faster, with more movement, and then the strike zone is still subjective, kind of to what the ump decides it is that day. And you know, this guy calls it off the plate a lot. It's like, well, I mean, isn't it one zone for everyone? Why does umps have tendencies? But that is the human nature of it. And because there was no solution, people tricked themselves and said, you know what, I love the human element. I like it. And the only reason people said that is because there was no solution. So you just had to trick yourself into saying, this isn't that bad. We have a pretty easy fix that should be here relatively soon. So
what is that?
I just think the job is incredibly hard. And then I also haven't done a lot of research on this, but I don't know if you saw Joe West's comments. And he said he reached out to Angel Hernandez to see what MLB scored his performance that night. And they scored it apparently a 98 out of 100.
Come on.
And we heard Theo Epstein say that if he was to make some changes in baseball, he would widen the strike zone. And we saw Alex Rodriguez say that he would widen the strike zone and make it, fat and short instead of skinny and tall, which it became. And I agree with that change. They should change the strike zone. It would be better to have more balls in play with that. And I want to look into it because it almost feels like the umpires got a little bit of that memo, but no one else did, because balls off the plate are on either side are being called seemingly more this year than years past. But that is not official or anything. But I do want to look into that.
Well, okay, so a couple things you just said. So what are the changes that are coming soon that you're referring to that people might not?
Well, they're already testing out the, I don't even know if it is robot, but automatic balls and strikes being called in lower levels, where there's still an umpire standing behind home plate, but he has an earpiece in, and then after the pitch, he gets told by the computer or whatever it is, you know, that was a strike or ball, then he makes the call. It's not perfected yet, though. There's pitches that, you know, if I throw a pitch that 20 feet in the air and then it comes down and it lands at the batter's in between his feet, but it nicks the zone, it's calling that a strike because technically it nicked the zone. Last I read, they didn't really perfect that it had to go through the zone. So I don't think it's ready. But once it's ready and once what the automatic strike zone looks like per the robot's calls is what we all say, yeah, that seems right. It should be implemented as soon as possible, in my opinion. But I just don't think we're ready yet.
So the role of a home plate umpire would be to basically be the communicator of what the computer's called something. And then make mm-hmm. and then be the human being who adjudicates whether somebody's safe or out at home or balls fair
yeah,
or foul.
Keep the pace of play, get guys in the box and the pitcher moving.
And you like that?
You know, you got to get the new ball out. They're always looking for new balls after they get stuffed.
Yes, that's
and
true.
Plays at the plate, check swings, I guess.
You like
There's
that?
Still some stuff to be done.
You like that? You would like that? You would prefer that than the current setup? You'd like that?
If the calls are correct. Like right now, if we're all watching a game, sometimes there's a collective groan at the bar or in the crowd because everybody watching had it as a strike or a ball, but the umpire had it off. If we changed to robots and we still had those collective groans nonstop and it didn't feel better, the technology didn't get us in a better place, I would say it's not worth it. But I think it can get there. A lot of leagues and sports use this technology of ball tracking. So, yeah, it would need to just feel good. Everyone would need to kind of say, like, no, yeah, I trust it. That's right.
And then you heard Joe West said that Angel Hernandez told him that disastrous night behind home plate where everybody hated him, I mean, the whole country was chiming in, and Kyle Schwarber and his reaction was giving everybody who was watching the ability to feel like they were venting with him, that baseball thought he was damn near perfect that night. Is that what you just said?
Yeah. So I can find it. I don't know who originally had the article. I wish I could quote them. But Joe West is making the rounds now because he's retired.
Right, he's got his podcast.
He doesn't have a mic every Sunday night, so he's going on a lot of shows. Good
right.
for him. He's got a lot of cool stories to share. And he said that it was graded 96% from MLB okay. on a podcast he went on. I'm trying to search. I don't want to shout someone out. 670 the score. Home plate Angel okay. Hernandez. Joe West went on there, said he asked Angel, what was your score? And he got a 96%. And Joe West said they need to sync the strike zone that they're grading the umpires on with the public perception of the strike zone. So I'm really interested to see if there is a disagreement there.
if the
box is putting on the screen is different
right.
than what MLB is grading the umps on. But that's a pretty...
Hey, that's
a problem.
Of course. Well, look, if they're grading the umps on a certain box, and then the box that the national TV partners, and then of course the local TV partners are all using, and we're all saying these people suck, and baseball's like, way to go. That's one thing, but the players are the ones who are flipping out. I mean, your breakdown, John Boy, of it with the lip reading of Girardi and Schwarber and everything was terrific. I mean, that's the problem. Forget about the disconnect with the fans, which is significant, but if there's still a disconnect with those who are actually competing, that's nuts. That's crazy.
Yes, I agree. I don't know if that's the case, but I'm interested because we've heard just people talk about how they want the strike zone to go back to being wider instead of taller and skinny. And I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe the umpires said, yeah, we too. We want that to go back as well. But they call based on the scores they get, you know, and that information isn't public to us. We have third-party Twitter accounts that do their own grading system on a different strike zone, apparently. So there just needs to be more transparency. If the umpires are getting graded by MLB after each game, let us know. Because then let us know what the parameters of that grading system are, so we as a viewer and players understand what they have to be looking for when it comes to the pitches.
Before I let you go on with your day and we get to your news, just a couple minutes here, because you and John Boy Media see more baseball maybe than everybody else combined. Is there something up with the baseball? Are you noticing something with the baseball? Is it deadened? Do we have a dead ball?
Yeah, but I believe they've admitted that is the case. They said going into the 2021 season last year that they wanted to have a tighter or a looser, whatever makes it fly less, baseball. But because of shipping and quarantine and all that and logistics going down, we had a mixed bag of baseball. So some games had the juice ball and some games have the new ball because production stopped. And they said this year the plan was it to be the ball that flies less. So I believe MLB has been open about that yes, we did change the ball.
Okay. Is that why the Yankees pitching looks so damn good or what? What do you think? Because to me, that's the number one surprise of the season so far.
They're all working on new pitches nonstop, and I like what Matt Blake's been doing. Like, every pitcher last year started throwing a changeup, and every pitcher this year is throwing a cutter, and they're working well, but we definitely had the two juice ball years, 2017 and 2019, and this is from Alex Chamberlain on Twitter. Home runs that were barreled to straightaway were home runs 46% of the time in 2017 and 45% of the time in 2019, and we're down to 26%
wow.
this year.
That is significant. That's a large number. So, okay, congratulations, John Boy, on the news that you have today. I'll just give you the floor to share it with my viewing and listening audience here.
Yeah, thank you very much.
We
were seeking another round of funding so we can kind of go to that next level as a company and build the infrastructure and the management and you know, searching for a CEO. And we closed a round of funding. We got $5 million from collection of investors, and the leader of the round was Connect Ventures, which is a CAA and NEA joint system. So through them, we got some players and some really popular people to come in and be part of it that we hope to utilize and believe they'll add value. And it allows us to kind of take a couple more chances, not need everything to be an instant success, and dream a little bigger. So we're super excited.
And then to you, it's not just going to be for baseball too, right? You're gonna do this for all.
We're going to try. We don't have any single sport that we're putting on the map and saying we'd need to cover this. I'm more thinking about it as finding people that we think have the same kind of attitude about making things and fun for what they're doing, and whatever they cover, then let's add them to the mix. But keeping the same tone and brand of everything we've done is main priority as we look to add more people.
Yeah, I'm looking at the names here. Billy Crystal, Josh Hader, Gabriel Union, Dwayne Wade, Carl Anthony Towns. You got Noah Syndergaard, CC Sabathia. Those are some pretty interesting names that are putting their hard-earned American dollars on John Boy Media. I say congratulations to you, sir.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's always bizarre to hear. And some of them, you know, we reached out because we knew they were fans, and others CAA reached out, and it's wild. Billy Crystal, I still haven't met him yet, but we chatted, and I said, what celebrity would you like? I said, I don't know. I don't really do celebrity culture that much. I said, Billy Crystal. That would be the one that I would brag about to my parents and everyone. So that was very exciting.
Well, have fun storming the castle, John Boy. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Congratulations on everything that's going on with you, as I always say, and keep looking for my call. I truly appreciate our conversations. They're fun. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you very much for having me on.
You got it. Everybody check out John Boy Media. And then, of course, John Boy himself at John Boy _ on Twitter, at John Boy Media on Instagram, right here on The Rich Eisen Show. So let us take a break. And when we come back, we hit on the latest athlete who needs a check and self-awareness. That's next. 844-204-RICH. Your phone calls as well. Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts, people, or as you might know from their jingle, O-O-O, O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offers friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs, because you know when you need your car fixed, you need somebody who knows what they're talking about and is helpful, has a smile on their face, and gets you back on the road. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you just find the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fix, or a quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts knowledgeable, helpful, and the best of all, friendly. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/Eisen. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/Eisen.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Back here, 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Chris Brockman had to leave due to an emergency. Everything's fine, but he's done for the day here on the program. So it's just us three.
Yeah.
Here on Cinco de Mayo.
We're the three best friends right now. Anyone could have.
Is that what we got?
Okay. It's already quieter.
Very good. Very good. So there are some athletes that need sometimes a mirror, right? To look in the mirror and have a little bit of a reality check.
Yeah.
Right.
Reflect upon themselves.
Right. Or just understand, you know, hey, when you hit send on that thing, did you think about that? Did you think about it?
Yeah, because we have no edit button, as we know.
So I saw this sometime yesterday. Took a while. Patrick Beverley, as we know, he says it with his chest.
He
says it with his fingers, says it with his thumb. And he saw, just like the rest of the basketball-loving world, he saw Ja Morant come up with 47.
Yep.
And drop it on the Warriors. And they needed almost every last bit of those 47. Yeah, even with Gary Payton II being knocked out for a month, by the way. How about that? A month, it looks like he's going to be out, like he could be back for the finals if the Warriors make it there.
How about that, though? At least he's the season right. Technically
it's not. It's not over. It's not completely done, right? So Patrick Beverley tweets out this. 47-piece head slap didn't happen in our series. Just saying. Hashtag facts. Now... In terms of facts, that's true. He did not.
It is factual.
He did not score 47 against the Minnesota Timberwolves. He did score at least 30 twice.
He did.
He scored 17 in. Let's see what we got here. He scored 32 in the first game. 23 in the second game. 16 and then 11. 30 and then 17 in the six games. Of that series in which Patrick Beverley's Timberwolves were eventually, what's the word for it? Eliminated. So from his couch, he's sending out the hashtag facts of a head slap. Meaning what? Like you guarded him better, but you still lost. You're home.
Took the L.
I mean, how does somebody do that? He doesn't sit there and think, I'm eliminated. And then this is the Warriors you're talking about.
Uh-huh.
This is the Warriors you're talking about. You're talking about a team that puts on the court right now, I think you could say, three bona fide Hall of Famers.
And that is a fact.
There will be three guys with jackets one day.
Correct.
They're all going to be the Curry family, the Thompson family, and the Green family will all be making a trek to the Connecticut and Massachusetts area one day.
No lies are detected, Rich.
Okay. And the head coach there has got rings for his player and... Rings as a coach.
As an exec, too. Doesn't he have one as an exec?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
I thought he's with the Spurs.
I don't sometimes get the idea of why aren't you realizing what you're saying?
I think it's Pat Beverley, right? Like, you know, Brockman and I always get into it. I'm a fan of Pat Beverley, especially Clipper Pat Beverley.
Of course.
And Chris doesn't like his antics on the court, but I tell Chris, every team needs a Pat Beverley on their team. They need that gritty guy who's just going to.
Of course.
And he gets under your skin.
No question.
And this is just a confirmation of that.
It's just like, you got to be kidding me. You've been eliminated by this guy's team.
Yeah.
And it's true. He didn't torture as bad as he torched the Warriors in game two. But the Warriors have home court advantage currently because they took a game in game one in Memphis, just like they did. And they couldn't make that cash. We'll see if the Warriors make this one cash. But the Warriors now are in the position that the Timberwolves were in, which is five-game series. You've got more games in your house than the other one.
Yeah.
So.
And I think we're going to see all five of those games.
Well, good enough. I'm here for that. And we'll find out if Dylan Brooks gets suspended. We'll see if the NBA does the flagrant two is not enough because you've fractured another man's elbow and you've knocked him out for a month. And that is apparent. That should, again, not be part of anybody's punishment is how badly somebody's been hurt. You know?
Yeah.
We've seen that many times in hockey. Well, you knocked that guy silly and out cold and he's out for all this time. You should be out for that same amount of time. It was a bad, awful foul and a violation of the code, as Steve Kerr said, and Kendrick Perkins came on yesterday and supported. But all that said, the Warriors are a championship organization, and Pat Beverley is saying, yeah, well, hey, we didn't give up 47. Hashtag facts, head slap. Well, the head slap he slapped his head with is with a thumb that he shouldn't hit send with.
You should do that.
You should do that.
Should not do that.
Or should not do that.
Not do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Definitely not. But again, like I said, that's Pat Beverley, man. That's the Pat Beverley brand, and that's how he's managed to survive in this league.
Let's go to Jimmy in San Antonio, Texas. We'll take his call because we're going to take Terry Fontenot's call coming up next of the Falcons. What's up, Jimmy?
¿Qué pasó, hermanos?
What's going on?
Hey. Hola, muchacho.
Happy Cinco de Mayo.
Well, that's one of my things about the call. The first, I'm still hungover from yesterday, TJ Jefferson Day. That was awesome.
How is that?
Did you enjoy yourself?
Oh, I ate popcorn and played ping pong all day long.
That's what I'm talking about, baby.
Done, Jimmy.
That's what I'm talking about. My man, Jimmy. My man, Jimmy.
Okay, so Cinco de Mayo, Justin Bieber said, tell me something honest, right? Okay, Cinco de Mayo is just Mexican St. Patrick's Day. Mexicans really don't celebrate Cinco de Mayo.
Okay, great. I think
it's
more of
a DSEC. That's the Mexican Independence. That's the big party. This one, so your kids can dress up in sombreros and go to elementary school and eat tamales.
I love it.
All right, thanks for setting it straight, Jimmy. I appreciate that.
That's pretty factual from what I understand.
Thanks for setting it straight.
All right. Jimmy. Before I go, the Kurt Warner, Ryan Tannehill.
Mm-hmm.
So Tannehill says, not my job, right? Okay, that's cool. Kurt Warner says, no, I'm here to help everybody, paper or plastic, right?
That's right. I love
what
that
I learned
watching,
is
man.
That Kurt Warner would hold the elevator door for me. That's what I learned.
Yes, he would, because he's a nice guy, and I'm an a-hole when it comes to that.
No, you're not. You guys are the best. Hey,
thanks, Jimmy.
I hope everybody's well, and Brockman, hope things are cool.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Jimmy. That's a good call right there. Jimmy's, guys, be careful. Jimmy's watching.
If we had a caller Hall of Fame, you know,
Jimmy's in it.
I mean, he's up for, you know, nomination for sure.
Called it to TJ Jefferson Day yesterday.
What a great day.
He spent it by playing ping pong and eating popcorn.
You know what I spent the day doing?
What?
Okay, so.
If only, Jimmy had spent it going somewhere on one of his two motorcycles. Oh, that'd have been a much better way
to spend messed up.
TJ Jefferson
Day. I live in Playa here. We had two power outages within 3 hours of each other, right at the beginning of the second quarter of the Sixers game.
Oh, man. You didn't miss anything.
By the way, couldn't get out of my garage because there's no power. I had to call an Uber. I went to Yard House to go watch the game. By the time I got there, they were already down like 17. I could have stayed at home, Rich.
What a sad tale. And he could have been eating popcorn. Terry Fontenot, the GM of the Falcons, coming up.